Live from the WMTV studios in Madison, the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Foundation presents the 2024 U.S. Senate debate with incumbent Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde. Now, here's WBA Foundation President and CEO Michelle Vetterkind.
Good evening. The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and its member radio and television stations are pleased to welcome you to this U.S. Senate debate. Tonight's event originates from Madison, Wisconsin, at the studios of WMTV-TV. We have a team of broadcasters from communities large and small across the state involved in bringing this debate to you. Tonight's debate continues the WBA's long-standing commitment to excellence and public service. The debate is underwritten by the WBA Foundation and supported by a grant from the Wisconsin Counties Association. Let's go now to our moderator, a veteran Wisconsin broadcaster, member of the WBA Hall of Fame, and professor of leadership and media integrity at Loyola University Chicago, Jill Geisler.
Good evening. On Tuesday, November 5th, Wisconsin voters will choose between two candidates for U.S. Senator: Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde. Now, quickly, these are the rules to which they have agreed. For all questions from our statewide team of journalists, candidates will be told the length of time they have for a response. It'll usually be 60 seconds. We all see countdown clocks, and when candidates hit their time limit, I will remind them, and if they continue, their microphone will cease to function. As moderator, I also have the option to note when a candidate hasn't actually answered the question they were asked, and I'll give them 30 seconds to do so. And to be fair, their opponent will also then get an additional 30 seconds to respond. Now, we are providing another important service to this debate thanks to our data team. Many complex issues require deeper context and verification from reliable sources. Now, we have that for you. After each question, our data team will post links to resources on our WBA debate website. I'll remind you throughout the debate, and a QR code and a link will direct you there. Now, please note, we are addressing the candidates using the titles they have requested. The order of response for the first question and the last question was determined by a coin toss. So with that, let us begin with the first question. It comes from Allison Fergit of WKBT in La Crosse.
We're going to begin by discussing the economy, specifically pocketbook issues. The stock market today closed at an all-time high. Employment in Wisconsin is at a record high, and inflation has slowed. Yet we know many people still feel that the cost of many things is still too high. So we're going to ask about the variety of issues that focus on the cost of living, and we'll begin with health care. More than a quarter of a million Wisconsinites rely on the Affordable Care Act for their health insurance. The most recent polling shows that 62% of the country supports the law. Mr. Hovde, you said we need to move beyond the ACA. Meanwhile, Senator Baldwin, you've said we need to preserve it. If anything, what would you change about the Affordable Care Act? You each will have 60 seconds to respond, and by the coin flip, Mr. Hovde, you will go first.
Well, thank you, and thank you everybody for joining tonight. It's wonderful, and Jill for hosting and for the journalists being here, and it's finally nice getting this debate, Senator Baldwin. Look, the Affordable Care Act made three promises. Promise number one, it would slow down the cost of health care. Promise number two, it would increase the access to health care, and promise number three, that you would be able to keep your family doctor. But I'm a believer in results, and if you look at the results, every one of those promises has failed. Cost of health care have only skyrocketed higher. Access to care has declined, and declined significantly, particularly for a lot of people in our rural communities. And lastly, the family doctor has all but disappeared. The only thing that is meaningful was the pre-existing conditions. Look, I have multiple sclerosis, so I understand the importance of that, but we need a significant restructuring of our health care system.
Thank you, Mr. Hovde. Senator?
Well, I went throughout my youth without health insurance because of a pre-existing condition, and I grew up believing that was wrong. I had the honor of serving on a panel when I was in the House of Representatives that wrote the Affordable Care Act. And it was my provision that allowed young people to stay on their parents' health insurance till they turned 26. Sadly, my opponent, Eric Hovde, called that particular provision stupid and has agreed, or as you hear, has said that he would overturn the Affordable Care Act in its entirety, including my provision that allows young people to stay on their parents' health insurance. He also opposes efforts to negotiate with the big pharmaceutical companies to lower the price of prescription drugs, saving patients and Medicare money. We need to build upon the Affordable Care Act, and we need to build upon our efforts to negotiate lower prescription drug prices.
Thank you. We're going to stay with the cost of health care going to prescription drugs. And the question is going to come from Aditi Debnath of PBS Wisconsin.
The cost of insulin has been reduced and capped at $35 for many Americans. And beginning in 2026, a number of other widely prescribed drugs will have their co-payments decreased under Medicare. Yet many believe more needs to be done. What would you do as a U.S. Senator to reduce the cost of prescription drugs for Wisconsinites?
Well, I would certainly continue and speed up our negotiations with the big pharmaceutical companies. You hear of people regularly going to Canada and other places to get less expensive drugs. Why is that? Because those countries negotiate on behalf of their citizens. Until recently, the big pharmaceutical companies had a sweetheart deal that prevented those negotiations. But 2 years ago, we passed a bill to get those started. Sadly, my opponent would have voted against that measure. He said that many times. We are seeing real reductions in prices that will save both patients money, but will also extend the solvency of Medicare. We're also seeing victories like my own earlier this year when I forced the asthma inhaler manufacturers to lower their prices to no more than $35 per month out of pocket.
Mr. Hovde, your response.
I can't believe what I just heard. I mean, it's one lie after another. I believe we need to negotiate with Big Pharma. I think our drug prices are too high. When I first started taking my medications for MS, they cost about $6,000 a year. Now they're costing $35,000 for generic drug prices. I'm the one who's against Big Pharma. It's your Wall Street partner who invests in Big Pharma. You oversee it. You take massive amounts of money from Big Pharma. Your whole campaign is funded by Wall Street, Big Pharma, and Big Tech. That's how you launch all your attack ads against me. So I can't even believe you'd say that I don't want to negotiate against drug price, Big Pharma on drug prices. I think drug prices are wildly too high. And I'll actually do something about it because I'm not taking Big Pharma's money. I'm not taking special interest money like Senator Baldwin. In fact, her partner is making money off of it and doesn't even disclose the profit she's making.
We're going to move on to child care, and I do want to tell both of you one thing, and that is at the end, we have a final question that lets you respond to anything that you have heard tonight that you would like to challenge. Okay, and that will be in our final question.
But not right now.
Not right now.
Time.
We're going to move to child care, and the question on child care costs is going to come from Jeff Talen at WSAW in Wausau.
A typical Wisconsin family with an infant and a four-year-old spends about one-third of their income on child care. And some even have a hard time finding that child care because of a lack of workers. Wisconsin's median wage for child care workers is $13.78 an hour. How would you support child care providers and reduce child care costs through your policies? This is a 60-second response with Mr. Hovde going first.
Look, this is a big problem in our country, and I know this all too well because my wife was a single mother, and I saw the struggles she had providing for childcare, and that was over 30 years ago, and it's only gotten worse. Look, in my companies, I'm known as a family-friendly employer, and we go out of our way to create greater flexibility for our employees who just had a child or have young children. As I always like to say, if you have a need or a special event, you go and be at those events. I think we need to create a partnership with business and government, whether it's tax credits directly to the individual or tax credits to a business, to help this issue, because it is a very serious issue that we know very personally in our family when my wife was a single mom.
Senator Baldwin.
So we have a child care crisis in this country. Child care really struggled during the pandemic. Many daycare centers closed. Many family group settings closed during the pandemic. But we also know this is an area where the free market just doesn't work. The workers get far too little pay, and tuition is just out of reach of so many people. You know, it costs almost as much to send your child to childcare as it does tuition at a UW school. That's outrageous. You have only 9 months to plan for childcare expenses. You have 18 years to plan for college expenses. But I want to tell you about the Hovde plan. He's announced a plan very recently that would reduce federal spending back to levels of the last decade. While I've been fighting to increase the child care development block grant by $1 billion last year, and the proposal is $2 billion this year,
Thank you, Senator. The Hovde plan would slash that progress. Thank you, Senator. Your time is up. Let's move now to Social Security, and that's Shannon Sims of TMJ4 Milwaukee.
Americans want to know that Social Security will be there when they retire. However, according to the Social Security Administration, if Congress does not act before 2035, benefits will be reduced to nearly 20%. But there is something that Congress can do. What is your plan? You will have 60 seconds to respond. Senator Baldwin, you go first.
We can extend the solvency of Social Security very easily. It's called lifting the income cap. Right now, multimillionaires like my opponent, Eric Hovde, pay minute amounts. They're not doing their fair share. And if we lifted that income cap, the solvency would be extended for many years. But let me tell you about something even more troubling. The Hovde plan that reverts and resets spending levels to levels from the last decade would cut Social Security by 28%, an average of $500 per month. That's $6,000 per year. Talk about, you know, when people need money in their pockets. And why is he supporting the Hovde plan? Because he supports a $4 trillion tax giveaway to the very wealthy and big corporations. And he supports spending, just not for you.
Mr. Hovde?
Man, the one thing you have perfected in Washington is your ability to lie. I can't even believe you have the ability to stand here and say something like that. Look, I believe we need to protect Social Security and keep it sacrosanct for everybody who's on Social Security or getting ready to retire. If you want to know why Social Security's in trouble, it's real simple. Because we've taken federal debt from, well, Senator Baldwin has been in office, from $5.5 trillion to $36 trillion. That's why CBO has it projected to go cash flow negative in 8.5 years. So if we would have kept Social Security in a trust and not pilfered from it like you have for the last 26 years as a politician, Social Security would be in much better place. So we have to look at things for Social Security, like for those younger people, because life expectancy is going up, to make adjustments for that.
So to that point, we're going to stay talking about seniors, and we're going to talk about long-term care. And that's Neil Johnson of Big Radio in Janesville.
Wisconsin is facing a serious shortage of qualified caretakers to work in nursing homes and other long-term care settings, such as in-home health care and assisted living. One study says Wisconsin will need an additional 10,000 health care workers over the next decade, and that's for senior care alone. Do you feel the federal government should be addressing this need? And if so, how?
Mr. Hovde, you're first.
Oh, thank you. Look, it is a very serious problem. And look, I'm the youngest year of the baby boom generation, 60. The oldest year was born in 1946. And we're going to have a lot of people hitting retirement age. Look, the problem is we have a lot of people out of the workforce today, and we got to get more people back into the workforce. And that's an important part. A lot of nursing home owners, and I've known a few, are struggling with the massive amounts of regulations that they're also dealing with, which Senator Baldwin and politicians have continued to heap on them. So we have to take a private sector approach to try to drive more employment into that sector. And yes, that will increase, call us a rise in wages, which would be good for those people, because being a nursing home worker is a difficult job.
Senator Baldwin?
Yes. We need to focus on the workforce. And we need to have multiple pathways to get a great paying job caring for our seniors. I believe in apprenticeships. I believe in the programs that are starting nursing programs in high school and then creating a debt-free path to getting a higher degree. There's a lot we can do, and there's a lot that has already been advanced in the Congress to do just that. But I have to say, when we're talking about seniors, we have to respect our seniors. I was raised by my grandparents, and it made me aware of the meaningful difference that programs like Social Security and Medicare made in our lives. My grandmother broke her hip at age 90 and actually voted for me for Congress from her nursing room. Eric Hovde has said that people in nursing homes are at no point to vote.
Okay, that is, time is up, and we're going to move on. And we're going to talk about reproductive rights. And that question comes from Allison.
A Marquette Law School poll released Wednesday found that 61% of those polled across the country opposed the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, spurring some lawmakers to want to codify or put into law the provisions of Roe. Roe establishes the right to an abortion, but also sets some limits and includes some exceptions. What is your position on once again making Roe the law of the land? Senator Baldwin, you will respond first. You have 60 seconds.
Well, a woman's rights and freedoms should not depend upon her zip code or state. In the state of Wisconsin, where we have a criminal abortion ban that was passed in the year 1849, we have services accessible in 3 out of our 72 counties. That means 69 counties, there is no access. And harrowing things are happening to women in this state. I've talked to women who face the risk of sepsis and near death before that they could get the services that they needed. That's why I'm so proud to lead the Women's Health Protection Act, which would restore Roe nationwide. My opponent has said that he is 100% opposed to abortion rights. I'm trying to lead the way to restore Roe so that we don't see prosecution of women who have miscarried or doctors who are providing health care. Women are dying because of the current situation.
Mr. Hovde.
Well, look, it's been brought back to our state. I think we as a state should resolve this in a common sense and compassionate approach. I believe in the beauty of life. I've had 2 daughters and 3 grandchildren. And I agree with exceptions for rape, incest, and the health of the mother. And I think women should have a right to decide early on in their pregnancy. Senator Baldwin, you have passed or pushed to allow abortion to happen up to the point of delivery, where a healthy baby can be born alive and be terminated. To me, that is unconscionable. You're shaking your head, but please give, what month would you stop? Is it the 8th month? It's the 9th, is it the 9th month? And you run these ads saying I'm against, for a national abortion ban. I am not for a national abortion ban. I never have been. And when she talks about my comment from 14 years ago, yeah, my daughters were young. And then they grew
Mr.
up.
Mr. Hovde, your time is up on this question. Mr. Hovde, your time is up, but I am going to exercise the moderator's option to redirect you to the question that was asked, which is specifically about the recodifying of the Affordable Care Act. I'm sorry, the Affordable Care Act of Roe. And information about that is on our data page. But I'm going to ask you to respond to that question about the recodification, making it the law of the land, and then you will get 30 seconds to respond, Senator Baldwin. please?
I think I did. I said it's come back to the state, and I think we as a state should resolve this issue with a referendum where everybody gets a right to vote. The voters get a right to vote. I get a right to vote. I clarified where my position is, and that is I believe that women should have a right to choose early on in their pregnancy, but there comes a point in time where a baby can be born healthy and alive, and I think it's unconscionable to terminate that child's life.
Senator?
Eric Hovde, that does not happen in America, and it's very clear that he has never read Roe v. Wade. I'm pushing to have that be the law of the land. Your rights and freedoms should not depend on your zip code or the state in which you live. And while I said what he just said doesn't happen in America, let me tell you what is. There are health care providers facing the threat of prosecution. There are states with six-week bans. There are states with no exceptions for rape and incest.
Thank you, Senator. Your time is up. All right, we're going to move to another contentious topic. And this one is immigration. Let's go to Aditi.
A sweeping bipartisan border bill failed to pass the U.S. Senate earlier this year. The bill would have added tougher standards to qualify for asylum, allow for partial shutdowns at the border, and open new avenues for legal immigration. In the interest of border security, would you like to see this bill revived? Why or why not? Mr. Hovde, you'll go first. You have 60 seconds.
That bill was dead on arrival. The House had already rejected it. It was masquerading as a border bill with really funding Ukraine. And every senator, once they found out what was in it, was opposed to it. The simple fact is it would have codified allowing almost 5,000 illegal immigrants coming into our country every single day. It wasn't going to change any of the asylum laws or immigration laws at all. Here's the reality, and you can't run from this fact. The last year of President Trump, only 300,000 illegal immigrants came into the country. The first year of Joe Biden, he lifted 95 executive orders, most importantly, stay in Mexico. Over 3 million came in the first year, over 3 million the second year, over 4 million the next year. We don't know how many have come in, but it's flooded our streets with fentanyl. We have criminals that have entered into our country, and it's created a humanitarian crisis. I fought against sex trafficking for almost 20 years, and they can't account for 300,000 children. And those children, sadly, a big percentage of them have probably ended up in the
sex trade. Thank you, Mr. Hovde. Your time is up. And your response, Senator Baldwin, again, the question was about the bipartisan bill.
Yes. So we negotiated on a bipartisan basis in the Senate the toughest border bill that we've seen in years. It would have added 1,500 new Border Patrol agents to our southern border. And had it passed in this spring, they would be there now. Very importantly, the bill also deployed technology to our southern border to allow us to scan every vehicle that comes through our ports of entry. That would have allowed us to interdict fentanyl that is poisoning folks across this country. The Border Patrol agents endorsed this measure. But you know what? Eric Hovde and Donald Trump wanted the political issue. They wanted the chaos. They didn't want a solution. I'm focusing on real solutions. Eric Hovde wants to run political ads against me.
Well, you mentioned political ads, and I think we're going to make you both a little uncomfortable with the next question because it's about misleading ads. And the question is going to come from Shannon.
Viewers and listeners have told us they are frustrated with negative, misleading ads. So let's talk about two of them. Senator Baldwin, your ad claims that Mr. Hovde called farmers lazy. Mr. Hovde, your ad claims Senator Baldwin funded a clinic offering transgender therapy for minors without parental consent. Both of these ads have been found false by nonpartisan organizations. Both of these ads end with you saying, I approve this message. You could pull these ads. Why don't you do it? You both have 60 seconds to respond. Senator Baldwin, you may go first.
So there have been 19 independent fact checks of Eric Hovde throughout the course of this campaign that have all produced false results. Eric Hovde is lying. I think it's really hard to say that an ad is false when you are hearing Eric Hovde in his own words. You're seeing this with your eyes. I'm telling you things he has said. The context of that ad relating to farmers was he was doing an interview about why we could easily increase the retirement age to 72, because farmers didn't take the physical toil they used to. They just largely ride around on tractors. I spend so much time with dairy farmers, and I can tell you, they are insulted by those words, and I stand by those.
Mr. Hubdy.
Look, every single one of Senator Baldwin's ads has been a lie. I'm supposedly the jerk from California, yet I'm born, raised here in this state, spent my, you know, last 12 years living where you grew up. I vote here, I live here, I was raised here. I'm a UW grad, you're not. The farmer's
yes, I
thing,
am.
Law school, not undergrad.
Yes.
Look. As it pertains to the clinic, she funded an earmark for that clinic. The clinic changed what's on its website and took down that it did it without parental's approval. But every single one of her ads has been false. So, you know, Senator Baldwin, you claim I live in California, and that's where I am, and I'm not a Wisconsinite, even though, as I said, I live in the neighborhood you grew up. You know, there's such thing as a way to prove it. It's called a utility bill. I have my utility bill. Let's get them for the last 10 years.
Mr. Hubdy,
and see
time,
who actually, and
Mr.
see
Hubdy,
who actually
your time
has
is,
lived in this state.
Your time is up, and I don't believe that we heard from either of you about the question that asked what a candidate should do if an ad that they have produced is known and proven to be false. Should you withdraw that ad? And so I'm going to give each of you, again, another 30 seconds to answer that question, starting with Senator Baldwin, since you responded first.
So, you have seen ads where we have amplified things that Eric Hovde has said. Sometimes he's said those on right-wing radio talk shows. Sometimes he's said those in television interviews. I think it is totally fair for a candidate to amplify what their opponent has said, especially as a proof point of where they stand with regard to fighting for you.
Mr. Hubdy?
Look, I think I addressed it. What you're saying, the ad that I ran about the clinic, it's not false, and they just changed what's on their webpage. As it pertains to Senator Baldwin, literally every single one of her ads, she even claims for the things that she's accomplished, she didn't accomplish. She's trying to take credit for doing something against fentanyl when it was Senator Tim Scott's bill that wrote the bill. He said Senator Baldwin offered no amendment and hadn't talked to her for two
Thank
years.
Thank you, Mr. Hovde. Your time is up. We're going to change gears now to foreign policy, and we're going to move to Jeff.
Just this week, the leader of Hamas was killed by Israeli forces. Some hope this could bring the war between Israel and Hamas closer to a ceasefire. Polls show Americans want U.S. support for Israel, but are also worried about civilian casualties. And the Biden administration has told Israel to let more humanitarian aid into Gaza in 30 days or face reduction of U.S. aid. Should the U.S. continue to aid Israel, and should restrictions be placed on that aid? Mr. Hovde, you begin with a 60-second response.
Look, Israel was attacked, and they lost thousands of lives. And if our country was attacked, we would go wage war on that country if it happened in Mexico or in Canada. And the Biden administration constantly meddling and trying to engage and tell them how to wage a war is wrong. But let's go back to what this conflict really is about. And it's not so much between the Palestinian people and Israel. It's really between Iran and the Israel and the U.S. Iran controls Hamas and Hezbollah. They're both proxies. They're funded. Senator Baldwin not only voted for the deal that President Obama allowed Iran to lift the sanctions and get cash payments that fueled ISIS and the terrorism, but then President Trump put in crushing sanctions And had Iran ants on his back, Senator Baldwin goes back and votes for the deal that Joe Biden, that lifted the sanctions, that funded
you,
the terrorism,
Hubby.
And that's why we're in this war today.
Senator?
Yes. A little over a year ago, on October 7th, we saw a horrible terrorist attack on Israel. 1,200 people dead. Rape was used as a weapon of war. Hostages were taken. Israel has the right to defend itself. But as we've seen this war unfold, we've also seen untold civilian casualties, children, women. We have to help foster a path towards ceasefire so that the hostages can be released and so that humanitarian aid can be surged into Gaza. I am hopeful that with the confirmed death now of Yahya Sinwar, that we will have a path to that peace and keep some hope alive of a two-state solution in the region.
Let us move to another foreign policy issue, Ukraine. And that question is going to come from Neil.
The focus now is Ukraine. Since Ukraine was invaded by Russia, the U.S. administration and other NATO allies have been strong supporters of Ukraine. Should whomever the new president is stay that course? You both have 60 seconds. Senator Baldwin, you may begin.
You know, this conflict is truly about democracy versus dictatorship. And we have to stand on the side of democracy. Vladimir Putin is a dictator. He illegally invaded a sovereign democratic nation. And the free world stood up to Ukraine's defense. That's what's at stake here. If Putin were allowed to run through Ukraine without our backing the Ukrainian troops, who's next? A NATO country? Poland, and that would mean U.S. boots on the ground. We need to stay the course, but it seems that Donald Trump doesn't know the difference between our allies and our enemies. And Eric Hovde stands with him and would have voted against the legislation to fund Ukrainians' weaponry.
Mr. Hovde?
Look, I think the war in Ukraine is a direct result of the absolute failure in how we left Afghanistan. We pulled out our troops, we left a key strategic military base, we left Americans behind to die. 13 Marines that died that day, Afghan allies that supported us that risked their lives. There's a reason why you saw them running, holding onto those planes, falling to their death. We also left billions of military equipment behind. Because of that, I think our adversaries moved. Putin on Ukraine, Iran through their proxies on Israel, and China's getting more aggressive. As it pertains to Ukraine, the White House, an expert came to them and said, look, you're getting ready to park 17 F-15s and like 30 A-10s. If you train the Ukrainians how to use those aircrafts, Russia will not have air superiority. And we should have done that. So we could have done things to prevent that war from even beginning. But you have sent billions of dollars.
Mr. Hovde, your time is up. And I'm going to return to the specific question. And I believe we heard from Senator Baldwin to stay the course in supporting Ukraine. Specifically, I will ask you, are you in agreement with that idea or not? And then she's going to have 30 seconds to respond.
Sure. Do I think that Vladimir Putin is an absolutely evil man? Absolutely. But I think we need to try to find a way to get to peace. Sadly, what's happening in Ukraine is we're wiping out generations of their people and turning a lot of their cities into rubble. And while I was supportive of Ukraine at first, the amounts of tens of billions of dollars that have gone to Ukraine that are not accountable causes great concern for me. So I don't think we should continue to fund endlessly money into Ukraine.
Thank you, Mr. Hovde. Senator Baldwin.
I strongly support backing Ukraine. This is really literally about democracy versus dictatorship. because of those brave soldiers in Ukraine, we don't have any boots on the ground in the region. But had we not supported Ukraine, where's Russia going next? Poland? We have to stand on the side of democracy. Eric Hovde would have voted against the measure that helps fund the Ukrainian effort.
Thank you both. We're now coming back to domestic issues. We're going to talk about farming, and let's go to Aditi.
Congress has failed to approve a new farm bill, which expired at the end of last month. This puts funding at risk for agricultural subsidies paid to Wisconsin farmers and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as food stamps. What will it take for each of you to vote on a new farm bill? Mr. Hovde, you have 60 seconds.
Well, I'm not an expert on the farm bill because I'm not in the U.S. Senate at this point in time, so I can't opine specifically on all aspects of that farm bill. But one of the problems I have with a lot of the farm bills is they're masquerading as farm bills, and while they address some of the needs of farmers, a lot of the bills are just funding big corporations that have nothing to do with farming. So I have a great concern about that, and I think farm bills need to get back for farmers. Let me tell you what I hear from farmers, because if you drive around the state, you see Hovde signs on literally almost every farm, and I've been on so many different farms. And what are they talking about? Regulations constantly, the kind of regulations that Senator Baldwin and her allies continue to push on them. One of the big ones that they're very concerned about being passed is WOTUS, Waters of the United States, and all the implications that have. So as many farmers will say, if you just stay out of my way, I know how to care for my land and do proper farming.
Again, the farm bill question to Senator Baldwin.
We need a farm bill that's balanced, and we need to provide that certainty to Wisconsin farmers. They're very eager to have Congress pass a new farm bill. They need the consistency that a farm bill has. But one of the problems with the farm bill right now is that the House, controlled by Republicans, has written a bill that's basically eviscerated nutrition programs. Farmers support nutrition programs because it means purchasing their goods. But I just want to say that the Hovde plan, which would revert and reset spending levels back to the last decade, that plan would cut the U.S. Department of Agriculture by 34%. That is not standing up for our farmers. And I will say I was proud to receive the Wisconsin Farm Bureau endorsement. I think I'm the first Democrat in nearly 20 years. That's for the hard work I've done on behalf of our farmers and dairy in particular.
Thank you both, and I'd like to remind the viewers that our data team is posting information about things like the Farm Bill and all of the other topics that have been researched for this debate on the WBA debate website, and you can look those up if you'd like to extend your knowledge as well. All right, we're going to move to the environment, and let's go talking now about PFAS contamination, and that is Allison.
Several areas in Wisconsin are struggling with PFAS contamination, chemicals linked to cancer, changes in metabolism, and lower birth rates. So much so that in communities that I cover in La Crosse County have been relying on bottled water for more than 3 years because of dangerous levels in their well water. What do you believe Congress's role should be in preventing the problem from getting worse while supporting communities dealing with PFAS right now? Senator Baldwin, you will start. You have 60 seconds.
Thank you. PFAS chemicals are sometimes byproducts of manufacturing. They're also a component of firefighting foam that is in almost every airport. I'm glad you mentioned the situation in La Crosse. In La Crosse, they have a municipal water system that's able to filtrate the PFAS. But on the island where the airport is, everyone has private wells. I've worked very closely with that community, as well as with La Crosse, including providing federal funds that were approved in the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Eric Hovde would have opposed the bipartisan infrastructure bill. That funding that I've secured for communities across the state, including Wausau and Rhinelander and Peshtigo, would not have been available. I am proud to help lead the efforts to remediate PFAS across the state.
Mr. Hovde, your approach to the PFAS contamination?
Look, I've been a member and a big supporter of the Clean Lakes Alliance. I grew up on Lake Mendota. I live on Lake Mendota. I swim, water ski, fish. I love our lakes. And it's so important that we make sure our water is safe and secure. So yes, do we need to make sure from a regulatory standpoint that any of these cut chemicals that are having an impact need to get addressed and cleanup efforts? Absolutely. But Senator Baldwin constantly goes and say, I would have voted against this and that. And the reason why I would have voted for against a lot of these issues is really simple. It's because we're breaking our country apart financially. We're driving ourselves off a cliff. That's why inflation got ignited. That's why the price of your food has gone up, the price of your rent, your health care, your car insurance, because of this reckless spending that she's been engaging in.
Thank you. Again, I'm going to point you to solutions and proposed solutions, which is what the question was. So, Mr. Hubby, you have 30 seconds then to respond about that. And Senator Baldwin, you will have a response as well. What solutions do you propose?
Jill, I just said that the government needs to do a job of regulating any kind of chemical that is contaminating our well water and put forth cleanup efforts. That's exactly what I said.
Okay, thank you. And you can have that same response time.
So I talked about some of my work to help communities remediate when PFAS has been found in their water supplies. I also am a sponsor of a bipartisan bill called the Healthy H2O Act. That would provide grants to allow private well owners that are across the state in rural areas to test their water. The tests are expensive, and many people aren't able to test to make sure that they have clean drinking water. This
Thank
would
you,
fix
Senator.
That.
All right, we're covering a lot of territory tonight, and now we're going straight to Washington and the Supreme Court. Jeff has that question.
The Marquette Law School poll out this week finds 90% of those polled support a code of ethics for the Supreme Court justices. While the court did adopt a code late last year, it's been criticized because it lacks accountability by allowing justices to police themselves. Among the proposed responses, the adoption of a code with more teeth, as well as 18-year term limits for the Supreme Court justices. What, if any, new rules do you support for the Supreme Court? Mr. Hovde, please start our 60-second responses.
I think we should absolutely have a code of ethics for the justices. I don't think they should be engaging in any kind of private investment in the stock market while they serve in that capacity. And I understand the desire to have a term limit. I'm supportive of term limits. I think career politicians should have term limits. And in fact, when we talk about a code of ethics, I think this is a very important point. From the get-go, I said I'm not going to take special interest money. I will not be owned by anyone. Unlike Senator Baldwin, who not only has taken massive amounts of special interest money from Big Pharma, Wall Street, Big Tech, but her partner on Wall Street, a Wall Street executive, is investing in Big Tech and Big Pharma, a committee she oversees, and they don't disclose those investments and how much they're profiting from it. That's fundamentally wrong, and you should disclose what investments your partner is making.
Thank you, Mr. Hovde. The question on the Supreme Court?
Well, first, I need to talk about what Eric Hovde just said. Eric Hovde should stay out of my personal life, and I think I speak for most Wisconsin women that he should stay out of all of our personal lives. That said, with regard to the Supreme Court of the United States, there's no trust anymore. When we saw the exposés about Clarence Thomas and others going on private planes to exotic locations, spas, when we hear stories that private interests have paid off mortgages and vehicle loans, that is outrageous. We need a binding, tough standard of ethics and conduct. We're also very distrustful now of the court because we saw three Trump-appointed nominees lie to the Judiciary Committee about their respect for precedent. So I think an examination of term limits for the Supreme Court in a way that doesn't advantage one party or the other, because we don't know who will be president when those term limits come up, would be an advisable
policy. Your time is up. Thank you, Senator. All right, we're going to move on to voting rights, and that one is Shannon.
There's a patchwork of election laws across the country, leaving concern about potential unequal access to the ballot box. What role should the federal government play in increasing voter confidence while also ensuring that the election process is safe and accessible?
And that question goes to Senator Baldwin,
you have 60 seconds.
Thank you. So voting rights are so critical. And we have seen at the state level, including here in Wisconsin, laws passed that make it harder for some to vote. There's the expression, some people don't want some people to vote. My opponent has talked about people in nursing homes. I think the exact quote was, people in nursing homes have 5-6 months to live. They are at no point to vote. My grandmother broke her hip and voted in my first congressional election from her nursing home. But the Voting Rights Act has been eviscerated by the United States Supreme Court. And we've got to add back the provisions that were lopped off by the Supreme Court. And we also, I think, have to pass at the federal level laws that guarantee access and disclosure.
Thank you, Mr. Hovde.
First, I have to go back to the last comment. Senator Baldwin, I could care less about your personal life, but when you are, your partner is investing in companies that you're overseeing and you're not disclosing that, that is an absolute conflict of interest. As it pertains to voting rights, look, we have to create confidence in our voting system. It is causing too much tension in our country. And let me tell you, it doesn't help when our state Supreme Court brings back drop boxes when those were only used for a pandemic. So why are they being brought back? But look, I have an important question to ask Senator Baldwin. There's a bill before the Senate that would bar non-U.S. citizens from voting in elections. But you have not taken a position on that. So it'd be very interesting. And I'll give up my time. Are you going to vote for that provision that would stop non-U.S. citizens from voting in our elections?
Mr. Hovde?
Well, I'll take this, Lex, 3 minutes.
All right,
it is already illegal for people who are non-citizens to vote in federal elections.
Then your time is up.
Because it already is the law.
Both of your time is up. Thank you. And again, information about voting is available on our debate website. We are going to look now, you had mentioned fentanyl previously, and you mentioned it in relationship to immigration, but there's more to the subject, so let's talk about that, and that's Neil's question.
The Wisconsin Department of Health Services reported last year fentanyl was identified in 91% of opioid overdose deaths. The synthetic drug is making its way through legal ports at the southern border. A senior official with the U.S. Customs and Border Agency states that 2/3 of those arrested for smuggling the drug are Americans. What bipartisan strategy would you suggest to curb the flow into the U.S. and address community-based treatment and prevention programs? You both have 60 seconds. Mr. Hovde, you may begin.
Look, this is an issue I started talking about long before I ever gotten into this election. We lost 108,000 Americans last year to this poison, 112,000 the year before. It's the number one leading cause of death of 18 to 45-year-olds. It's devastating communities all over the place. My 26-year-old daughter has known 5 people in her college or friends that, brothers and siblings of friends that have died from this poison. And you're exactly right. It is laced into a lot of pills. So what do we need to do? First, it's produced most of the content in China. We got to take hard sanctions against China, hold them accountable. We've got to close our southern border where a lot of this pours over. Third, we got to stiffen sentencing laws. If you're caught lacing pills with fentanyl, you should go away to jail for the rest of your life. you are killing people. And Washington has done nothing about it, and Senator Baldwin has done nothing.
All right, your time is up. Thank you, Senator Baldwin. Your turn.
This is a personal issue for me. My mother struggled with addiction to prescription pills. When I first came to the Senate, the crisis, the opioid crisis, was the overprescribing of things like OxyContin and oxycodone. And we have passed many sweeping reforms, particularly in the VA, that has reduced the number of these pills that are prescribed. Heroin came next, and then fentanyl. My first bill on fentanyl was introduced 8 years ago. Eric Hovde somehow thinks he's the first person who's ever focused on this problem. We need to get Narcan, the overdose reversal drug, deployed statewide, and I have been a leader in making sure that our first responders have it accessible.
Thank you. And we don't have much time left. We're going to give you a question that only takes 30 seconds, and it has to do with bipartisanship. And that question is going to come from Shannon Sims.
We hear from voters who say they are tired of gridlock in Washington and want their representatives to be willing to work across the aisle. So, in the spirit of bipartisanship, we're going to ask both of you to name a contemporary elected official from the other party that you consider to be a role model for consensus building. Mr. Hovde, you will get 60 seconds.
Well, sadly, the Democratic Party just lost one that was fantastic at it, and that was Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia. It'd been nice if Senator Baldwin would exhibit some of that. She voted 95.5% of the time for with President Biden and rarely reaches across the aisle. Look, in the world of business, you have to reach across the aisle. You have to compromise because you're never going to get anything done. When I become your next senator, I promise you, I will reach across the aisle. I'll go meet with all the senators
Thank
on the other side
very
and try
much.
To.
Senator Baldwin, who do you name?
Well, I would name Susan Collins. I sit on the Appropriations Committee, and our committee is chaired by Patty Murray, and Susan Collins is the ranking Republican member. And we have passed almost all of our bills out of committee on a bipartisan basis. I fight for Wisconsin and only Wisconsin, which means I'll work with Republicans or Democrats, Republican administrations or Democratic administrations, to get the job done for Wisconsin. But I'll also stand up to them.
Thank you.
If necessary.
Your time is up. Well, I told you both that there would be time for you to respond to things that didn't sit well with you. So we're going to go to the last question, which we call defending your record, and that's Neil.
Throughout the campaign, and in this debate, you've heard criticisms that you may believe were inaccurate or unfair, and you'd like to respond to them. Here's your chance. You each have 60 seconds, and by the coin toss, Mr. Hovde, you go first.
This is the last question?
Yes.
Look, there's so many lies that Senator Baldwin's made up. As I said, she's perfected the art of lying. Where I'm from, where I live, the things I've said, she takes this much what I've said and puts it out of context and then tries to say I'm saying something different than I've said. You've heard it on Social Security. She always tries to run around the fact that we have gone into a debt crisis that has created the inflation and the problems that so many people are experiencing that are hammering the livelihoods of most Wisconsinites. Look, I entered into this race because I love my country. I love America. We've been blessed to live in this wonderful country. But our country's gone in a wrong direction. You can stay with Senator Baldwin, who's been in Washington for 26 years. Do you think you're better off than you were 4 years ago or even 26 years ago? I think it's time for a change. I promise you I will work hard on your behalf, and I'd be honored to have your vote.
Thank you, Senator.
I fight for Wisconsin and only for Wisconsin. And it is something that I take great pride in. But Eric Hovde just said something about lying. Independent fact checkers have fact checked him 19 times with 19 falses. So keep that in mind when you listen to him. He's made assertions about my personal life. I want to talk about his professional life. Eric Hovde owns a $3 billion California bank, a $7 million Laguna Beach, California home. And he's been named among the more influential residents of Orange County 3 years in a row. We have a Brown County, Wisconsin. We have a Green County, Wisconsin. We do not have an Orange County, Wisconsin. Look, this election is about regaining our rights and freedoms. This election is about helping working people get ahead, not supporting a $4 trillion tax cut for the rich and big corporations. Right. I ask for your vote.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, you've seen them, and we hope tonight's debate will help voters make more informed choices. Now, we thank the candidates for their time and sometimes for their patience with us as well, as we had to get as many questions in as we could and sometimes cut you off. But we'd also like to thank our journalists on the question team and also on our data team. And please remember that our data team's research materials on debate topics can be found at the WBA debate website. And a quick thank you to that team. It's it's Elizabeth Wattis of WMTV Madison, Harm Van Huysen from GBA Green Bay. It's Dariel Fair of WKOW Madison and Jonathan Krause of Woodward Communications Radio in Appleton and Oshkosh. They were working behind the scenes. And now, once again, thank you all. And let's go to WBA Foundation President and CEO Michelle Vetterkind.
Instead of Michelle, I guess it's back to us. So
good evening, Terry Bell.
Yeah, hi, Todd Alba. And we're going to spend the next half an hour debating the hour-long debate we just heard. So I guess, first of all, Todd Alba, your impressions.
We're going to be joined here by our political editor, Dan Schaefer, as well here in a moment. I'll be anxious to see what he has. I have a couple of thoughts. I thought that the headline of the night from everything that I heard was when the question was on the Supreme Court and whether there was a need for ethics on the Supreme Court. Mr. Hovde went first. He ended up attacking Tammy Baldwin's partner on her investments. And Tammy Baldwin was ready for this in her reply and said, "I think I speak on behalf of all Wisconsin women when I say stay out of my life." I thought that's something that's going to be a headline tomorrow, I think. I thought that was a really strong moment for her. Beyond that, I thought particularly a lot of the first part, it was just kind of a lot back and forth. And I have to say, I'll be anxious to see what Dan says. I want to be very careful about this because these things are not easy to do. We're in the broadcasting realm. It's not easy. I think Wisconsin Association of Broadcasters have put on a lot of great events. I thought this one came up short tonight, particularly when Eric Hovde again tried to bait Senator Baldwin on her partner, then tried to bait her on whether or not she supported the constitutional amendment coming up here in Wisconsin on voting. And he said, "I'll give you my 2 minutes." So basically giving Senator Baldwin 3 minutes. She said, "Look, it's already illegal to vote in Wisconsin if you're not a citizen." And the moderator cut her off and gave her 15 seconds of 3 minutes. I thought that was ill-served and I was disappointed.
Yeah, the format seemed to leave a lot lacking. And I think in the modern strategy of debates, when you ignore the question and just go off on your own talking points, the moderators would just cut the person off when their time was up and go to the next question. Most of the time, there were efforts to ask some follow-up questions.
Right.
But it just seemed a little bit off.
I thought there were too many cooks in the kitchen, to put it bluntly, on the moderating board there. Too many people. We never really got into substance. On to your point, there were some things that could have been fleshed out more. I would have liked to see more time for Senator Baldwin to debate. I'd be interested in the clock on who got more speaking time. It felt like Hovde did, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
30 seconds didn't seem like enough time to answer the questions, even if the candidates had gotten straight to the point. We're going to bring Dan Schaefer in, Civic Media's political editor and the editor of the Recombobulation Area. And Dan, just first of all, let's start with your general reaction.
Yeah, I think you guys have been right on the money with this. I think this debate did leave a little bit to be desired. But I think, at the end of the day, I think there were some really strong moments from Tammy Baldwin. Todd, you mentioned the moment where she kind of defended the attacks on her personal life. And I think that was, you know, definitely a standout moment. Hovde seemed to really try to goad her into some issues, you know, going back and forth with this throughout the debate, directing a lot of, you know, his criticisms and accusations directly at her. Baldwin really stayed above the fray for much of the debate. And the one time she did get into it, I thought she